Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, Answers for the Family will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your family. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I would really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we together can make a difference. And I want to add that, you know, I speak to so many people that talk about how negative everything is that's out there. That's why you need to let people know about shows like this, because the only way we're going to be able to overcome a lot of that negativity is to put out positive content and for you to spread it out to other people. So before we get to our guest, and I just want you to know that I really appreciate and I'm very grateful to all of you who take your precious time to listen to this show, because please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten a free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answersforthefamily.com and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. And if you leave that comment, I know we're coming up on Thanksgiving. This is a great way to share with your family the things that you're truly grateful for. Now, a quote, although not from the journal, it is from today's guest. Our joy and love come from knowing what's really important to me and then living a life that reflects it. So, and the question that we start with in this situation is, are you overwhelmed? Okay, because a lot of people are right now. Well, get over it. Our guest, Christine Arilo, is the author of Overwhelmed and Over It, Embrace Your Power to Stay Centered in a Chaotic World. As a transformational leadership advisor, three-time best-selling author, and host of the popular Feminine Power Time podcast, Christine is recognized worldwide for her work helping women to make shift happen. Remember, that was shift in the lives that they lead, the work that they do, and the world that they wish to create through her podcast, books, and workshops globally. Christine, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm super excited for our conversation today.
Well, I've enjoyed going through the book and really seeing how there's so much great encouragement of really trying to get people to look inward and not let so much of this stuff that's on the outside control what it is that we're doing. So I know in the book, in Overwhelmed and Over It, it really encourages women to say, this way of working just isn't working for me now, and they need to know how to change it now. So tell a little bit more about kind of why you felt that this was the time to write this book and some of the things that they can do to really start making changes happen now.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's a good place to start. I'll start with just saying for anyone out there that is feeling overwhelmed, I just want to say, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. And the amount of overwhelm has been increasing slowly but surely for decades. And we are at that like breakdown to breakthrough point where like it's too much. We just can't keep putting more on. And the truth is, women and men and people have been just adding more on to the already full plates for a long time. I mean, you can trace it back thousands of years, hundreds of years, but we can go all the way back to just, let's say, the 1970s and 80s when women fully entered the workforce and the family system didn't change and the systems around us didn't really change to really support that to actually happen. So we did what we had to do, which was basically just keep taking more on. And, you know, this book, it's so interesting that it's coming out right now because I've been actually researching this question of like, why is it as smart as we are and as talented as we are, and we have stress management and, you know, self-care, like all these strategies, we are more overwhelmed, burned out, exhausted, less happy than we were in the 1970s. And I asked that question of myself about a decade ago. And so I've been researching this, like the deeper root causes underneath the burnout and the overwhelm and the stress for over 10 years. And I started writing overwhelmed and over it about 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't know, of course, that we would be here today at this point, yeah. But I think the universe did. Yeah. And so it's the perfect time for us to be getting kind of to the deeper reasons of why this is so versus just continuing to try to survive in systems that aren't really working for anybody or most of us.
You know, I love the fact that you've talked about the changes that they've gone and they've started. You mentioned the 70s. And I had someone recently, and they were talking about how, you know, all of these problems have come out and they've all just happened. And this person was a millennial. And they said, all of these things have just happened. All this stuff has just been dumped on us. And I said, I think I've been around here a little bit longer than you have on the earth. And I thought of it and I went, you know what? I want you to watch a TV show, and it's on Amazon Prime right now. It's called Laugh-In. And it was started in 1968. I said, if you watch that show, you will realize that they're complaining about the same things. They're using humor to do it, but it's the same thing. So everything that you think has just started in the last couple of years, you recognize that, and you really go into that in the book.
Yeah, have you ever heard the metaphor about the frog in the boiling pot? Do you know this metaphor about the frog in the boiling pot?
Yes, but please share it, because okay. I don't know that everybody has.
Okay, so I don't know why the frog is in the pot, so I can't explain that. But here's basically the metaphor that I think explains what's happening. So there's a frog in a pot of water, and it's on a stove. And the water is just room temperature, but little by little, someone's turning up the temperature 1 degree at a time. So when you're in water that's going up 1 degree at a time, you don't really realize it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter until basically that water hits boiling and then the frog is dead, cooked. And it doesn't even know that it's in this pot of water. Well, it's been like that for us, for humanity. We can trace it back. I mean, when I trace it back to the part of the roots in the book is back to the Industrial Revolution. So basically, the theory is that the systems that we live in, so think of systems means education, government, healthcare, corporate, financial, how we run our society, which, by the way, was created by humans, right? It's not like it's a natural thing. It's just what we decided and we created. So we created these systems that have a consciousness at the time. So the consciousness of the Industrial Revolution was be bigger, grow more, grow as fast as you can, and dominate the world. Mm-hmm. And that kind of moved us all the way, you know, through, like you're saying, the 60s and 70s. And a lot of the culture was built around consumerism. And accumulation. I mean, think of the 1980s. Like, oh my God. I mean, you just have to go back and look at the fashion and the music. And it's like, you know, bigger, better, bigger houses, more cars, more houses, more this, more that. And what it was interesting when I was researching the book, I went back and I had some conversations with some women and men that were really part of the kind of the uprisings that happened in the 60s and 70s, the racial uprisings, the equality. And I asked them, you know, like, why didn't society change? And they basically said that there weren't enough conscious beings in places of power to basically say, you know what, this isn't going to work. We're going to hit a breakdown point, which, by the way, is where we are. And if you think about it, in the 1980s and 1970s, there was no email.
Okay. Christine?
Yeah.
Hang on just a minute. It appears as though you got
Learned. I got muted?
Yeah, somehow, but now you're not.
Now I'm good. Okay.
Okay.
Sometimes it happens. So we should keep going.
And I don't know if it was a Zoom thing or whatever, but if you can kind of start that one over, because for about the last 30 seconds.
Okay. So the consciousness of the systems that we live in were created really like a spark of the Industrial Revolution. And then that fed into this age of information and technology. So think of like even in the 1970s and 80s, there was no email, there was no social networking. And so a lot of the, I've studied a lot of traditional leadership business tradition. Like that's my, I have my MBA, like that's kind of my, that's my background. And then I realized, I don't think I'm getting all the wisdom here. There's other stuff going on. So I started studying yogic science and human consciousness and other things. And it's so fascinating. Yogic science has talked about for a long time that we would come to this point in humanity when the amount of information and the pace at which we're operating is completely unsustainable for the human system. Our endocrine system, our glandular system, our nervous system can't handle it. And so that's where we are. So part of what we're experiencing, I think, in this global pandemic and this all of the earth is like humans, like wake up, like too much. And that's what we're experiencing as, you know, anyone who's parenting at home, you know what I'm talking about. You know, it's like, yeah, you can't take any more on. And I think it's this call for us to be like, we've been so busy trying to keep up and just trying to keep our heads above the water. 2020 was like a deluge of like, we're drowning now. And what are we going to do as humans to respond?
No, I think that's a great point. And essentially, as you were saying that, one of the thoughts that was coming to mind was a lot of these changes, I think that it kept a masculine feel to it. And I think that that is also part of the problem, because I think that with a more feminine approach to a lot of these things, because the whole concept of more, you know, it's like you said, in the 80s, it was, you know, we have to have more, we have to have more clothes, we have to have more cars, we have to have more money. And then we now add all of this information. I think that we're going into a level of overload, but I think that if we can do it, if we can accept these things and get more of a feminine feel for it, it's the only word I can think of right now. One being thinking of the masculine as being more aggressive all the time or trying to be more dominant. And I don't think that's what we need right now. I think right now we need more of a focus on mindfulness and being able to look first inward and then see what it is we are projecting out to people.
Yeah, it's a great place to go. And I'll totally pick up that thread is it's interesting. So a lot of the work I do is I teach about power and I teach about leadership and I teach about masculine and feminine power together and what that looks like when they come together and they're actually harmonized. In fact, this necklace I have on is a symbol of masculine and feminine power that are actually harmonized. And when you have men, it's like yin and yang. I mean, this is like thousands of years old. We're just kind of figuring it out now in our modern culture. And one of the root reasons why we're so overwhelmed in our society is that we value what we would call traditionally masculine qualities more, right? So it's like, be busy, make stuff happen, get it done, drive, strive, and grind or hustle. Like that word is like, you know, as people always talk about, I got my side hustle. Yeah. And a lot of what we actually call the masculine is actually distorted power. So a lot of the power we see out there in the world right now is completely not what would be called like aligned power. It's distorted power. So that aggression and that be number one. But we're so in our culture. I mean, I never got taught the feminine in graduate school. It wasn't until, interestingly, when I became an entrepreneur in 2006 or seven, I had my first, what I call superwoman sob, but men can have these too. So you have to tell us if you've had one of these. And I was 6 months into being an entrepreneur and I was trying all of my like MBA corporate, you know, tactics. I had vision boards out and how much I did. There was never enough and I didn't have enough and there wasn't, and I just, the tears, this is the superwoman sob, just like, ooh, like the pressure and just despair. And after that sob, I heard this very small voice, which is the voice of that deeper wisdom. And it said, Christine, you need the feminine. And if you try to do this the way that you've been trained, you're going to burn out. You're going to exhaust yourself and worse, you're not going to meet, you'll never get to your mission. You can't do it this way. And I'm like, that's true, but I don't know what the feminine is. What is that? You know, and that was actually 2006. And that was part of the genesis of what brought me to this. This whole book, Really Overwhelmed and Over It in My Work, is about feminine wisdom and yogic wisdom and earth wisdom and like how things actually work. And we, in our society, we do what I call poo-poo it. We poo-poo it and we woo-woo it. You know, it's like, be more realistic, be more logical. But if that worked, we wouldn't be here today. So it's not like throw away the intellect. It's like there's this whole other part of ourselves that we haven't valued as a culture. So we don't value it ourselves. Even when I work with a lot of women leaders and they want to slow down, they fill that space because we're afraid to slow down. We're afraid if we don't keep going, it's all going to fall apart. And so I'll just stop there because I'll let you pick up whatever thread you want to take us.
No, but I agree, but I think that men have the same issues. And now as we're, you know, in my case, in getting a little bit older, and you see the speed in which many of the younger people are doing that climb now, the same climb that we did. And, and I think we're in a position to where it's like, well, if I stop, they're going to race right past me, you know, and I have to keep going and going and going. And personally, I've been very blessed. One of my sons has taken over one of my businesses. And the beauty of it is that he's doing it so much smarter than I did. He's making sure that he has his, you know, his fiance is number one in his life. And he's making sure that he is taking time for them to do the things that, you know, from my generation, it was, hey, I'm supposed to make the money. I'm supposed to do this. This is what a man is trained to do. And in many cases, it removes you from those things that you need to be doing that is a softer, more feminine side. And we as men need to look at that as not a negative, you know, but in my generation, that's what we were told. You know, that was sissy stuff. You don't do that. And fortunately, I think that, you know, I've been able to grow and pass that on to my own kids. But I think it's important to have books like yours. And in fact, that's one of the things I was going to say. I have it written in my notes somewhere to say later on, but it was to say, I know that this book talks a lot about, you know, the work that you do with women. But as I was reading it, I said, you know, men need to read this book. You really do, because it's really talking about things that aren't necessarily male or female as much as it is something that's in all of us. And like you just said with your necklace, it's about a balance. And that's the thing that I think is going to get us through all this.
It is. And I love that you brought in your son, because I just got to speak to a group of this weekend. I did a virtual retreat for all women, 20 women, probably age like 35 to 65. And then that evening, yesterday evening, I got to speak to 20 seniors in high school. Girls. Mm-hmm. And it's one of my passions, because to speak to young people in college, like just coming in or in high school. And because the pressure on them is crazy. I mean, like what they're experiencing compared to what we experienced is insane. And if we won't make this change for ourselves, then let's find a place within us that will make it for our children. And there's a term called CRISPIs. I don't know if you've heard of this. This is what a lot of college administrators are calling the kids the young people, when they come into college. They're so burned out from high school and all the pressure that they are like having a hard time functioning or melting down, or they're burned out, you know, and they're freshmen in college. And so there's a name for them. They're called CRISPIs. And in my research, you know, just looking at the number of young people between just 8 and 12 asking to put on antidepressants, the stress is too much. And I didn't know there was depression, you know, I was 12 years old. And so this is the piece, what we've been doing as a society, and why I'm so happy to be here with you and to have this conversation for all of us, whether you're a parent or you mentor others, is that we've literally been so busy just trying to keep up. We haven't had a chance to step back and be like, what are we doing? You know, what are we doing? And when I talked to those girls last night, the amount of worry they had about not getting into the right college and not doing it right, and the stress and the doubt, and then you put social media on it, and what you see, you know, people posting up of themselves, you know, that it's just so not what we would ever want, you know, our children to do. We can change society because we're the ones who create it, but not if we're working 75 hours a week and we don't know how we're going to pay our rent or our mortgage. And so I think that's the blessing where we're at right now is like, it's like a big permission slip for all of us. And this would be the question I would give to everybody at this time of the year, which is normally a slowing down period. The natural world in the Northern Hemisphere goes into winter, right? So the teaching is, and this is across yogic science, earth science or earth wisdom, all wisdom traditions talk about this. If you get your life into harmony with the natural seasons, the natural cycles, you will actually create a life that's in harmony. So when I teach entrepreneurs, when I run my own business, when I work with people in organizations, I'm like, the winter time is not the time to be pushing through to the end and then on December 25th fall over and get rest for 2 weeks and then pop back up and be like, okay, what are we gonna do? It's actually this time of like November starts the time we go into December. January is actually known as the dreaming time in the indigenous wisdom traditions. The whole month you don't really decide where you're going to focus until the beginning of February. In fact, the beginning of the calendar year used to be March equinox. Julius Caesar changed it, just randomly decided that they were going to move the start of the year. So if you think about that, spring, that's like when things naturally start to come. So I think it's interesting that this winter, everyone's being forced to slow down. And my partner and I were talking about this morning over coffee. And I said, you know, I just really hope people take this time to slow down and look around, and this is the question I'm giving to everybody. What is no longer sustainable and supportive in your life? And to look at it from the perspective of how you're working. So in your work life, look at it in your relationships and what's no longer sustainable or supportive. And then also look at it just in your design of your life and your home and your health and your wealth. And like, actually be honest with yourself about that. And if you can start there, that's where the breakthrough happens, so you don't, you know, become overwhelmed in this collective breakdown to breakthrough we're going through.
All right. We are talking about being overwhelmed. The book is Overwhelmed and Over It, Embrace Your Power to Stay Centered in a Chaotic World. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, I'd like you to tell me a little bit about what you discuss in the book that you refer to as crazy wisdom. So for everybody, stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking with Christine Arilo. And when we left, I asked a little bit about crazy wisdom. So share with our listeners what crazy wisdom is and give us some specific examples of how we can use it in our lives.
I will. I'm going to read it right from the book because the definition is right here on page 35. So I'm going to read the definition, then I'll share an example. So the superpower of crazy wisdom is the willingness to explore, trust, speak, and act from your deep heart wisdom over conventional wisdom or outside intelligence, even if it seems crazy, irrational, improbable, or irresponsible, or stretches you outside of your comfort zone. Mm. And, you know, it really is your intuition. That's what crazy wisdom is. And intuition is traditionally the feminine power. Intellect is traditionally masculine. And in our intellect and the mind and logic and rational, and have you ever said, just be real, be realistic. Yeah. And because the intuition isn't something you can see often with your eyes, you just feel it, right? You know it. And so I would ask everybody to remember a time in your life when you actually followed your intuition, when you did something that was outside the norm, outside what everyone else was doing. You had, you know, there's actually 8 different ways your intuition communicates to you. So maybe you heard something, you felt something, or you just knew something. And you followed that wisdom, even if people thought you were crazy, even if you thought you were crazy. I'm here, I see you nodding your head. Do you have a crazy wisdom story to share with us?
No, not a story, but one of the things I was smiling about was that, you know, when you said that, you know, when somebody says, you know, be realistic, sometimes either verbally or non-verbally, it's followed with, do it my way. Isn't it interesting when they go, be realistic, and then it's, do it my way? Well, you know, what they're saying is that whatever it is that is your intuition at that moment, or whatever it is that you're thinking, they, you know, they're disagreeing when they're telling you to be realistic. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to do it their way.
Yes. Well, or the way, right? The conventional way that wants to keep us going in the same pattern for how we've always been living and we've always been working. And I would just, you know, imagine many of the listeners, you've had moments, right, when you didn't follow your crazy wisdom, when you didn't follow your intuition, and you just, you know, followed the path of everyone else. Okay. And like, compare that to the times when you actually followed your own truth. And that's why I love speaking to young people, because that's the one message I want to give them. And for parents out there listening, you can't be with your kids all the time. Intuition and how it works and how it speaks to them, so that they can actually trust themselves and follow their truth no matter what, even if that means they don't do what you want. You've just given them probably one of the top 3 skills and tools that will serve them for their whole life. And it's actually where the book starts. The book starts with, instead of trying to do, be, and have it all, or follow the prescribed channels for success, or do what is realistic. Because, and here's the thing, you actually do what's right for you. Choose what's right and align for you. And what's interesting is, if you're only over there on that rational side, you can't create different things in what you know. Your mind can only create what it's seen before or what it's seen other people do. So Einstein talks about this. And so it's like Steve Jobs, literally the man who created and revolutionized, you know, the computer industry, basically is quoted as saying the intuition, way more imagination, how the imagination is so much more powerful. And just for us to think about that in our own culture, how we woo-woo and we poo-poo the imagination and the intellect because we want to be safe, safe, got to keep everything safe. But right now, what we need, and the crazy part, you know, back in the 1950s, women were still being put away in asylums for being crazy, for being hysterical. Mm-hmm. And I think this world needs more crazy, not crazy and destructive and harmful to others, but like, get out of the box and like, what's possible out there. And we can only find that, you all, in our hearts and in what the scientists call the quantum field and the yogis call the higher imaginal field. And it's there for us to dream the new dream.
Yeah. And I think one of the problems is it starts very young, because so many times you'll see parents or teachers or whatever that will stifle a child who has an imaginary friend or is doing something that is this, you know, incredibly visual thing to them in their mind. And it's like, why would you stop that? You know, but yet, oh, come on now, that's not real, you know? And if you start at an early age with that, eventually, yes, we're going to start to lose those things. And I couldn't agree more. That's something that we really need.
It is. And when I talked to the girls yesterday, the young women, 20 women, and I asked how many of you have actually had, you know how your intuition works and have took a class on it. And I think maybe like I got two hands that kind of went like this. And I'm like, this is why I do this work, because those girls, those women and men too, it's like every choice you make is determined from both the intellect and the inner wisdom. And if we don't know how to do it as ourselves as parents, which is why I also work with people that are older, how do we teach that to our kids? Mm-hmm. And then they're not really, I remember for me, like, for example, when I finished getting my MBA in Chicago, I had a dream to work in fashion and live in California. That was my dream. I had it ever since I was 18 years old. And my mother told me to be more realistic. She had an imprint from her family of you can't sustain yourself if you're an artist. That was like the family line. And so I didn't go to fashion school, and I went to business school and, you know, put my creativity to work as a marketer, which was great. I mean, I used that all the time. But when I finished graduate school, all of my comrades, all of my fellow students, they were going like into the traditional jobs, like, you know, to be a consultant, which I had been, but I didn't want to work 80 hours a week anymore. Or they were going to get these very like, I know, they were going to like sell cheese or like work in, you know, packaged goods. And I'm like, I want to work in fashion. So I got in my car, no job. I think I had $20,000 in the savings from, I had sold my house and moved to California with my dog. And my partner was there already, but it was California. So one salary, not enough to pay for California rent. And 4 months later, I got a job. I found my job at The Gap, which was my last corporate job in fashion, through my hairdresser. It wasn't through all the informational interviewing that I did, although I did a lot because I wasn't quite living the way I live now. I was working harder than I had to, but I went to get my hair cut. Got my haircut by this guy who started talking to me about fashion. I'm like, why does this man know about fashion? And he's like, oh, because I cut the president of Gap Brand's hair. Would you like to give me your resume and I'll give it to him? And so then he did. And 2 weeks later, I got a call from recruiting in a job that I never would have found otherwise, that led me into coaching and all the things that I do now. And I think that's the part where we don't trust, and we don't know how to be in relationship to those synchronicities and other things. And that big part of what everything figured out, then they cannot be with uncertainty. And then those universal hands can't come in to help us, guide us down our own path. And I think that's part of where the overwhelm really comes from. And this is something that you don't, it's kind of like a marathon. You don't wait till the day that you run the marathon to start training. You practice every day. And I think that's the piece I would say to everyone is like, we need to bring these practices into how we live our every day. And the good thing is we have more space and time now because we're all at home. So yeah. We can actually do some of these things.
Well, yeah. And I think you're saying, yes, we're at home. We're dealing with more family members. We're dealing with more people that are closer to us. We have a listener question that has come in. And again, yeah. I want to thank those that take the time. And this one reads, my daughter has a heart of gold. Unfortunately, several of her close friends have taken advantage of her both financially and emotionally over the last 4 years or so. They are what I call the me types. Sarah's company went out of business in April, and for the first time, she needed them to show up for her, which, of course, they had every excuse in the world for not doing so. She has spiraled into a depression, and I've been searching for that special book that she might be receptive to with what she is experiencing. Am I correct in thinking that your book would be a good fit for her? If so, I will buy it right away, and that is Marion in Louisiana.
Marion, thank you for that question. You know, it's interesting. My first three books that I wrote are all about self-love. And what you just described in this book is also at the heart of it. It is self-love. And what you just described is, you know, relationships are some of our biggest teachers. And when oftentimes we think when it comes to relationship, it's just the person we're in a romantic relationship with. Like that's where the teaching comes. But they can also come through friendships. And like for women, a lot of us get those lessons through our friendships with other women. It's certainly been true for me. And in my first book, Choosing Me Before We, which is about relationship to partners, I go a lot deeper into that. And there's a book called Madly in Love with Me. And when I hear which goes into self-love, and what I just want to say from a place of compassion, your daughter's getting a heart lesson and a hard lesson right now. And that there are a lot of people in this world that will take advantage of what I call the kind-hearted people, the people who have these hearts of gold. And even in Overwhelmed and Over It, what I get into in the middle part of the book that gets to the root reasons, why do we overgive? Why do we overgive to our work? Why do we overgive to our relationships? Why do we sacrifice ourselves? I would imagine that some part of your daughter, she knew this about her friends, but there's something within her that is allowing that to happen, which is hard to swallow that. You know, when I was engaged to he wasn't a complete narcissist, but let's just say he was on the scale. And when that relationship ended, I forgave him within 8 months. He cheated on me. He ended our engagement on the way to the engagement party. I forgave him within 8 months. It took me 5 years to forgive myself for allowing myself to be in that relationship. And that's what I would do with your daughter. Like, that's why the path out of the depression is through self-love and through her forgiving herself. And then there's the second vow of self-love is I only have loving, respectful relationships. And that's where with Overwhelmed and Over It, you can get clearer about why you overgive and why you allow that into your life. But then there's this part where then you have to take a stand for yourself. So I would recommend Overwhelmed and Over It and Madly in Love with Me for her. Yeah. And just know that and support her that it's part of her journey. She hasn't done anything wrong. We all get these life lessons. It's how we meet them that matters.
And I love the fact that you're talking about focusing on what you can do. It will do her no good to be angry with these people that weren't there for her or whatever. So it's more about looking inward. And you mentioned about the overgiving, and just share with some people what some of the overgiving imprints are and what the solution might be if one of these particular imprints is operating their life.
Yes, thank you. So in my research over the last 10 years, what I found is there are 13 different ways we overgive and underreceive in relationships and to work. And I'll name a couple of them. Yeah. So one, for example, is overpromising. This is where someone asks you to do something, whether it's at work or it's in your personal life. And you know, like your inner wisdom's like, you cannot say yes, do not say yes. You don't have the time. You don't have the energy. And you're like, no, I can do it. I can do it. You know, and then you're just totally screwed yourself. There is over caretaking. This is a lot for people, those of you out there that are empathic, and you can feel other people's pain. You can feel other people's needs. And so you're overgiving, you're over caretaking, trying to take care of them so they don't fail, they don't fall. It's almost like that fixer, that saver in there. And then you overgive of your energy, life force, and resources. And then there becomes usually a codependent relationship, or like kind of like Marion's daughter. I'm sure that I would imagine your daughter was overgiving in a way, and they were taking. That happens a lot. You know, you get the overgivers and the overtakers. Another one, the one that I'm working with every year, I pick an over to transform. My over this year is overextending. So overextending my life force, my energy, my money to try to make things happen faster than is actually in the flow. Because I'm a card-carrying member in the Impatience Club, and I want my vision and things to happen sooner. And so as I was going into this book release, which is my fourth one, in the past three books, I have overextended financially, time, resources, to the fact with when I was writing my second book, Madly in Love with Me, I was working so much and doing so many things, I literally walked into a cabinet and split my head open. And that was a wake-up call, right? That was me overextending myself versus with Overwhelmed and Over It. I was like, I'm not going to go into debt to put this book into the world. I'm not going to, you know, do everything. I'm going to do this in a way that's in harmony in my giving. My part about overwhelm is and one of my superpowers is breaking big things down into ways that you can actually become more self-aware. So when you become aware of your imprints, and in this case, your overgiving imprints, you start to see it. You're like, oh, look, there I'm overpromising. Oh, look, there I'm over caretaking. And then you start to see the impact that it has on you, which empowers you to make different choices, which people around you might not always like. But that's okay. That's part of the process.
And hopefully you'll have some people around you that will help you with it rather than get upset with you if you decide to make some of these changes. I belong to a wellness group that meets now through Zoom on Sundays. And it was interesting. One of the people brought up the fact that they are overextending. They're constantly overextending because they can't say no. And we were in a breakout group with about six of us. And so I said, okay, now I want the other five of us, we're all going to ask you for something and you're going to tell us no. And I started it. And I said, I want you to write me a check for $1 million right now. She goes, no. Okay, good. Next. And somebody said, I want you to come clean my house right now. And she went, no. Okay. And so five people did that to the point. And afterwards we said, do you realize that nothing happened? The world didn't stop. You said no. And we're all still here. We're all still friends. We're all still talking, you know, so anyway, but yes, I think it's a great point is that, you know, we all have these things. And I love the fact that, again, in the book, you have 13 of those, and there's probably more that we haven't thought about.
Well, and I love what you just said, because what you're getting to is that this is the root part. Yeah. So it's like one of the root reasons why we haven't gotten out of overwhelmed self-sacrifice, burnout, and these imbalanced relationships to work in other people is because there are deeper feelings and fears in our heart that we don't want to have to actually go and be with. And so what you just did with that woman, you have to actually have the experience of saying no and getting an imbalance and not feeling like, oh my God, I'm going to get yelled at, or the world's going to end, or I'm going to be left alone. There's deep fear in there. And we're like, I don't want to go in there, you know, but if you don't go into your own heart, you cannot be empowered, because your power comes through your heart. It's where your courage is, your compassion is, your passion is. And you don't have to sit on a cushion for 25 years in therapy. You can, if you're willing to go into yourself and understand yourself and know yourself and heal yourself and remember your own wholeness, you become empowered to be in right relationship with work and people and create the life you desire.
Yeah, I love it. And you mentioned your other book, or one of your other books. And I'd like to get you to talk a little bit about your thoughts on the difference between being me-focused and we-focused, because I think that there are people that will misunderstand that just on the face value. So share with us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the first book I wrote is called Choosing Me Before We. And I wrote that book because I felt like, and I wrote that book when I was 33. And I wrote it because I was trained to be a very empowered woman who had a lot of self-esteem. And that little voice I told you about earlier that said, Christine, you need the feminine. Mm-hmm. Well, that same voice talked to me when I turned 30 and my engagement had ended, and I was not the one doing the ending. And I asked myself, how did a smart woman like me end up here? And the voice said, Christine, you have a lot of self-esteem, but you don't love yourself. And I was like, that's true. And I'm like, I don't even know what loving yourself means. And so I started asking people. I asked my therapist at the time. I was part of a wellness group, and I asked them, and I got these like, love yourself, be kind, like all these platitudes. I'm like, no, I need to know why. And so that set me on a 10-year journey to understand self-love, which is why I wrote those three books. But the me before we is, if you in relationship, this is the order: me, then what we. It can't be we and then me, which means you have to know yourself. You have to know who you are. You have to be whole in yourself, because otherwise what we do is we take other people and we stuff them in what I call our love cracks, right? So basically, here's the theory. You're born on the planet. You're 100% pure-hearted love. Super excited to be here. Awesome. We're going to play. We're going to have a good time. And then stuff happens, because that's how this world is. And those love cracks is where fear gets in and where shame gets in. And then we put addiction is one thing that can go in there. But relationships go in there. And I, you know, my one best friend died when I was 15, another got pregnant, and my father died when I was 14. So I had, you know, a series of, and you don't have to have something horrible happen to have love cracks. This happens to all of us. I had put my ex-fiance so far into my love cracks that I, to take him out, meant I had to go deal with all the other stuff that was in there that I didn't want to look at. And so for 14 years, I tried to keep that relationship going. And I send him little love grams all the time, like, thank you so much, because I almost created a life I didn't want. That's what my inner wisdom, crazy wisdom said. There's like, Christine, yes, you almost married the wrong person. That would have been challenging, like many of my friends did. She goes, but you almost gave up on your life, like what I wanted. You wanted to move farther away into the suburbs. I wanted to move to California. I was damping down my own life. And so me before we is not instead of we. Right. It is know yourself, stay true to yourself. And if you're really true in your heart, then you can be a true partner with somebody. But you can't be that sovereign whole partner if you are coming from your wound and they're coming from their wound. And then you just create more wounds. Then you have kids from the wounds, and then the wounds just continue on.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that you explained that, because when I started doing my research and then I saw about your other book, and it hit a nerve to where I'm a very we-focused person, and it hit a nerve in the sense that I went, oh, well, wait, I don't want this to be all about being selfish. And then so I went through and I started reading it, and I said, no, this makes perfect sense. It's about just loving yourself and then bringing that person who's now not broken into the we relationship and doing we things. Then it makes perfect sense. But I wanted you to be able to explain it, and you did wonderfully. I love it.
Yes.
We have just a little bit of time, but we have another question comment that is coming in. And this one says, love your title. And actually, this one came in on email, so it was here before the show started. It says, I bought the book, and I am very anxious to get started reading it. I have a comment and a question. This election on top of COVID feels like overwhelmed times 1,000. And I think our fears are very real, especially for those of us with children. Also, I live in New York, where they have just announced plans to mandate a new vaccine. I've reluctantly complied with the masks, the social distancing, the online school, but I don't plan on subjecting my family, you know, to a rush to market vaccine. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on how we can deal with this next level of overwhelm that it seems like we are all being hit with. This is from Vicky in New York City.
Yeah, Vicky, such good questions. I got full body chills when say that. And there's at the end of the last section of the book is about liberating your power. And this is really important for us. So that we can't just be like lemmings that are following after what the world is saying of the people that are, you know, don't be a lemming, basically, right? Yeah. And that's where you have to be connected to both your crazy wisdom and your wisdom and your intellect. And this is actually my partner and I were talking about this very exact thing this morning. And in Liberate Your Power, I talk about a superpower called harmonic defiance. And it's one of my favorite superpowers. And basically it is you choosing to defy the systems that do not work for you, not by raging, not by fighting, not by rant and evangelize, right, for your family. And I feel like that's more important than ever for us to embrace that, to also be open, right? Be open, mm-hmm. but don't be a dummy pants and or a lemming. And that harmonic defiance, there's a great story in the book about a woman who, very simple thing, her daughter wanted to play lacrosse. The girls aren't required to wear a helmet, same hardball as the boys. Told her daughter, you want to play, you have to wear a helmet. And so the daughter did, and all the mothers started coming up to Allie and saying, oh, I wish my daughter would wear a helmet. I wish they would make a law so the girls have to wear helmets. And Allie just looked at them and was like, aren't you the mother? She's like, they're like, they didn't realize they had the power. And so that harmonic defiance is really important. And I want to encourage, I mean, that's a big, like, dare to do it differently and don't just follow the status quo.
Well, Christine, thank you so much. And for everybody out there, so again, recommend it. It is, you know, it is overwhelmed and over it. Embrace your power to stay centered in a chaotic world. What is the best way that they can get in touch with you in regards to it, or to get the other books or to learn about your workshops or anything else?
Yeah, the best way to stay connected to me is through my podcast, Feminine Power Time, which you can get on any of your podcast apps. I do that almost weekly. If you go to Overwhelmed and Over It, that'll take you to the book page, which also is my webpage. And so Christina Rylo, ARYLO.com, and that has everything is on there.
All right. Well, Christine, again, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you taking the time to write the book, and just let us know when the next one's coming out, because we'd love to have you back.
Well, I would love that. Sounds good.
All right. And for everybody out there, please tune in next Monday when we're joined by him, the founder of Intuition Lab, who will be discussing her new book, Radical Intuition, A Revolutionary Guide to Using Your Own Inner Power. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to the show. And I really like a lot of people to just subscribe. It's so much easier. It gets sent to you automatically. And you can do that through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, YouTube, if you want to see us rather than hear us, Spreaker, and SoundCloud. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember, stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. The more we can spread positive information out there, the better for everybody. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.